Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is your weekly 30 minutes of inspiration and stimulation from educators at home and abroad. Podcasts of 350 programmes are now available for listening or downloading by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. This week, I'm glad to bring you the second part of my interview with Paul O'Donnell, Principal of St Patrick's National School in Slane, County Meath. My reason for speaking to Paul was the publication by Meath County Council of his book Wild Teaching, Cross-Curricular Lessons Outdoors for Agoraphobic Teachers. Last week, Paul and I spoke about the book and the lesson resources it contains for primary teachers. Paul O'Donnell is currently seconded as an education advisor to the CPSMA, the Catholic Primary Schools Management Association, and that is where this week's conversation begins. Paul first tells me what his current work with the CPSMA involves.
It's a management body for Catholic primary schools, so there are about 3,200 primary schools in the country, and 2,800 of them are under the Catholic patronage. I've just seconded for 2 years, so my work is basically I work with some dioceses, so as chairpersons and principals, that with governance issues in schools, I suppose, or queries that they have. That's one part of it. And then each of the staff would have aspects. Our General Secretary, Seamus McConroy, would kind of delegate. So I'm doing some work on student placement at the minute. Others would be involved, let's say, in the new curriculum. So where the management body is represented on different tasks or groups, that's where we all would be delegated to as well.
So your work is with student teachers, is it?
Well, it's actually around the student-teacher process and facilitating student placement. And there's, you know, some work from the Teaching Council on that now around making sure the student teachers get out, that there are places for them, and the structure in place when they do go to schools. So I suppose we're just liaising from a primary school point of view, and I suppose promoting it in one regard, and also ensuring that the proper resources are there for schools when students come to them.
And what kind of supports do principals or chairs of boards of management require from the CPSMA?
We're speaking, I suppose, to what we consider the boards of management. So the principal as secretary, or the chairperson as chair. On a practical level, it's mostly principals who we're dealing with. Sometimes it relates to recent circulars, could be employment legislation, new employment in school, and also governance issues around maybe appointments or other aspects to do with board governance, replacing people. There'll be new boards coming in a year's time, for example, so there'll be training set up for them. Also with legislation, let's say with recent child protection legislation, so there were seminars rolled out around the country on that. And also then just where issues arise, maybe inter-staff relations, parental complaints. They're the main types of issues, I suppose, that arise that we advise on.
And would you advise on, say, things like Garda vetting and on things like new appointments?
Yes. So, again, I suppose when legislation comes out on it, the there are permanent staff in CPSMA and then seconded staff like I am. So the permanent staff, I suppose, would have a legal background, and they would be, I suppose, interpreting the legislation on a practical level for schools. So from that point of view, then we would have the framework for schools. So, okay, so a student teacher or you have someone from TY who wants to come into the school, this is what they need to have in place in terms of their vetting. And that would be the same then for TY, then for student teacher, for volunteers, for permanent staff, all of those categories, yeah.
How are numbers now in terms of applications for principalship? Because that was a problem at one stage. Is it still a problem getting people to go for principal?
It's definitely still a problem, yeah. From what we're hearing on the ground and just anecdotally, there are big issues about recruiting principals, yeah. Most definitely and most difficultly were in teaching principal positions, but also in admin positions as well. The numbers going for roles has dropped off, yeah.
And given how highly you spoke of, you know, your job satisfaction, why do you think that is?
It's become a very, very challenging role. And I think most principals would say they have high levels of job satisfaction. It's now being outweighed by the administrative burden. The way I describe it is, if you have an egg timer and all of the sand is in the top end, the narrowest point of the timer is where the principal is. So any bodies that have an interest in education, local volunteer groups, local groups, education, NCCA, all of that range, they all feel they have something to put into primary education. And it all comes across the desk of the principal. And the principal's job is to basically try to either slow it down or filter it out and just manage it. So just the real important practical stuff gets down to the board, the staff, the pupils in the school. Because at the end of the day, the most important thing that a principal is thinking of is teaching and learning in the school. But that's becoming more and more difficult to manage.
So you're kind of, it's a gatekeeping role then in a lot of cases, trying to decide what gets past you.
Yeah. One of the most simple practical things that I've learned to do is to open post with the shredder between my legs. And I mean that seriously, because if I was to hand out all of the information that comes through to the staff, even just giving it to them would overwhelm them in terms of what the message they're getting from me. Do I mean for them to implement this? Do I want them to do it? Do you know? So I've decided, unless it's very, very important, I just put it through the shredder. And there have been very few occasions where a teacher has come to me to say, did we get something on this matter that I'd like? Because if that happens, I say, no problem. We'd ring them up and find out. So that's just one simple thing. And our junior infants go on a tour at the start of every year, and they come up to my room, and one of the junior infants said last year, Mr. Don, what are you doing here? And I couldn't answer him. It's, in some ways, it's very complex, and it's just very difficult to describe. But it's a huge amount of interaction with peoples and groups and organisations. And if you're a teaching principal, you also have to teach a class for 6 hours a day. And that's becoming a huge challenge.
I mean, that seems really tough. I mean, it's hard to do either job well.
Well, I know my principal in Kilmessan, Brian Mullen, said he felt at his best he could teach and fulfil the administration at 70% capacity with both. But where one took precedent, the other had to fall off. And that's the juggling act that he had. So he just felt constantly guilty that he wasn't getting the admin done and that he wasn't getting the teacher's class properly.
And what would you think of these ideas that have come out, say, about having one principal between a number of small schools, or, you know, how can that be resolved? Because that the alternative is to have larger schools and to have no teaching principals, but a lot of communities wouldn't buy into that either.
Well, if you look down the Western Seaboard, I mean, I think the most common school size is 3 or 4 teacher school. So, I mean, you're talking in a lot of rural communities, the school is the only building of note in the community left anymore. And so I think that's important to preserve that. Now, I know teaching principals are there's a call for at least one administration day a week, and I think that would be a very good start, because I know in different size schools they get different amount of admin days. But what principals tend to do is they wait until near the end of term or when something is coming up, and they take a run of them together. But quite often then, that's then when people think, okay, well, the principal's free at this time, so all the admin issues come at them then. So at least with that, they would have certainty over a day a week that they knew that they could devote to administration and get some sense of balance in it.
And catch up.
Exactly.
What advice would you give to someone thinking of applying for a principalship?
Part of the advice, it'd be posing questions that people should consider before they think of applying. First thing is the reason that they're applying. Because there has been so little movement in the system the last few years, I think one of the reasons people are applying for principalships is perhaps to change from their current school, which might not be the best reason. The second reason I think people might apply is they look at the salary scale and think, oh, I'll do it for the money, which again I don't think is the best reason, because quite often by the time you maybe have additional travel or the additional time, you realise it's not really worth it from that point of view. The other thing I suppose I would say is it is quite attritional. So I didn't apply for a principalship until I was in my mid-30s, late 30s really. So at least I felt, okay, well, at a minimum, if I go to 55 or if I go to 60, I'm not going to be spending a huge portion of my career as a principal. So that's another factor. If somebody is in their 20s and they're thinking of going for a principal, it's a long, long time in that role. For those who do, and again, I would, and I have said this, I do think it's a fantastic career, but you do have to consider you are dealing with all sorts of people at all kinds of times and in all kinds of situations, so you do kind of have to have a robust mentality and an acceptance that not everything will go your way, or not, you know, you're going to have a lot of stuff maybe said to you or done that you don't agree with. So I that's why I think I'm not being ageist about it, but the longer you spend in the system, and I would advocate taking on maybe initiatives, challenges, curricular subjects, also just even policy formation, real nitty-gritty practical stuff in school. Not even necessarily further study with projects, but actual stuff in schools where you have to build teams, you have to get people to buy into something, and you get progress from it and you get a result from it.
And do that before you apply for principalship.
I would. Oh yeah, because I mean, it's much safer to make mistakes in that environment than it is when you go in as a principal in your first 6 months or first year, when everyone is watching everything you're doing. And I would say, personally, I think it's the most important thing as a principal to do in your first year, 2 years, even 3 years, is to gain credibility as a manager. That you're efficient, that you're organized, that you can plan things out, that you can you know, put a plan together and implement it from start to finish, even on simple tasks, that you can see that stuff has to be taken away and to simplify things down. So that's at a basic level that for me, and that's where you get those opportunities. And there is that element there. I mean, you know, posts of responsibility have been taken away, but there is an opportunity for people, if they are thinking that way, that to just volunteer or to go to the principal and say, listen, I'd love to take something on, or how can I help out? I'll tell you, you won't get a principal in the country that won't bite your arm off. So that's, I suppose, because so many people I've spoken to have become principals and have gone back to their old principals and said, I never knew it was like this at all. And I think that's a challenge. It's a shame we don't have a kind of mentoring process where you can shadow somebody for a few months to get an idea. Because like I said, with the junior infants, it's very difficult to actually explain it to somebody else until it comes your way. So from a practical point of view then, CPD that you're doing with regard to curricular subjects, also, like I say, working in groups, working in teams, those kind of practical nuts and bolts are the in terms of building blocks. And if you can also to do some work in leading other people, even outside of education, or being a part of groups or teams, because it's all about relationships. That's really, and then I think once, you know, if you establish yourself as a manager, that's where really your EQ comes in then, your ability to understand emotion, to understand other people, to get people to negotiate and compromise and work for the best interests of the children.
And you went in as a new principal into the school you're in. You hadn't been teaching on the staff beforehand.
No.
Is it easier, do you think, to go in that way or to become principal of the school you've been teaching in as a class teacher?
Well, most people would say it's easier. It's a clean break, you're new in. That there are difficulties when you come from the staff. Because, like, to some extent, I found this very hard for a number of years to accept, was that there is a difference there. You're not just one of the staff anymore. And I would always, like I said, you know, love being part of teams. And it would have been a joker, let's say, on previous staffs. And love that collegial aspect of it. And I found it difficult to accept that there was a difference there. So when you come from the staff, you do kind of have to cross that barrier and make that, or, you know, that people have to accept that there's a difference. But quite often, up until that point, you know, you work with other people, you do favors for them, they do favors for you. You have relationships, there's emotion there, you've built up real strong bonds with people. And that can be difficult unless you're of a certain disposition. But if you do come from that, then you do have to put practical things in place to make it as easy for you and them. That's the way I would look at it. So I was fortunate in that regard, in that I hadn't been part of the staff.
Is there a teacher who had a significant impact on you?
Well, I'm a bit of a magpie in terms of, as I've grown up, I've always taken things from lots of different people. And so I wouldn't have one person in particular or one source of, inspiration as such. But like when I was in primary school, Kathleen O'Toole was my sixth class teacher. I went back and did student placement with her. And she was just a fantastic teacher. And she also coached me. And again, we're going back to that community link. She was our athletics coach. So, I mean, she would have driven me up to Dublin, to Santry, to, you know, all Ireland's, and given up her time in so many ways. And was also just a brilliant class teacher. And like at secondary level, my secondary school principal, JJ Harvey, was principal of maybe 600 or 700 students in it. and he still taught. He taught maths at Leaving Cert level. And that's, I suppose, something that I've brought on. I've always felt I always have to teach because I don't want to forget what it's like to be a teacher. And I just thought that sent a brilliant message out to the rest of the staff and the pupils that, you know, I'm not just an administrator, that I used to be a teacher, or I still am. And then I suppose that Paddy Madden himself would have had an influence on me in terms of this type of work and just integrating it into the primary school system. The other person there in terms of, I know I mentioned primary and secondary and college lecture, but as a teacher, I had lots of great colleagues. I was very fortunate in the schools that I was in that I had great colleagues around me all the time. And I suppose most especially, unusually, I've taught in two schools with my own wife. And at one stage, I was in junior infants and she was in senior infants. And it was just, I mean, we get on very well together. We have a great relationship. And it was just lovely once a week. I used to have to take my children into her class and we would teach a lesson together. Or sometimes she'd come in and knock on the door and say, "Oh, Paul, will you come in and do a nature studies lesson with the whole lot of them?" And we'd take all 60 children together and teach a lesson. Or sometimes I'd knock on her door and say, "Oh, will you just do a bit of art with them there, Sally?" And we'd just, you know, I'm exhausted. And she would take the 60 of them in and she would do that. So she was just, for me, I suppose, the one person who taught me how to teach. That's really what I, you know, that I got from her. So it was for me, it was a great experience to have that. So that's, I suppose, educationally where I would have got my influences from before I became a teacher myself.
Did you meet as colleagues? Or
we actually met in first year in St. Pat's, yeah. She was in the room above me in St. Pat's in Lismore. So, yeah, we met in college, yeah.
So you went to St. Pat's yourself as a student. And how did your initial teacher preparation prepare you for teaching?
Well, again, we were very fortunate at that stage. I mean, our teaching practices, we got buses out to the schools. And again, we had... It's very scary as a student, and it's very difficult because you get this theory and then suddenly you're just thrown in front of a class and away you go. And it's quite difficult learning those ropes and learning how to gain acceptance from the children and also learning not to be their friend. And so that's quite difficult to manage. But we also did micro teaching where Andy Burke used to take pupils from St. Pat's primary school in Drumcondra, and we taught some lessons and then we got to watch them back again. And again, I thought that was fantastic that you got to actually assess your own learning, your own teaching, I should say, and the impact on learning. And we discussed it in groups with each other. While it was quite daunting at the time and nerve-wracking, it was I think a great way to practice that. But I mean, I think it's better now in that there's more time spent out in classes and in the context of the 4-year B.Ed, let's say, or in the PME, I think it has to be an intricate part of the program, yeah. Which I think it is more now than it was then.
Have you a favourite book or blog or writer about education?
In terms of leadership in the school, there were a few books that I would have kind of picked up along the way. The Art of Thinking Clearly by Rolf Dobelli, which is really about just being conscious of biases that you would have and thinking logically about situations and not getting carried away with those kind of biases. There's a book called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday, which again is about just, as I suppose, a self-help book of sorts, but it's just about being conscious of yourself and how you conduct yourself in as you aspire to things, success or failure, just keeping yourself in check, I suppose. And I suppose there are a couple of books in terms of leadership. I would hop from person to person on, say, Twitter. There's a fellow, Tom Bennett, who's big on behaviour in England, forms of government. He'd be very good. I'd follow Pazzi Salberg just from a global point of view as well. And there's a lady, Juliette Robinson, Creative Star is her blog, and she's on Twitter as well. And she's fantastic on outdoor education. She works a lot with preschools and primary schools, and she has a number of books on maths. Messy Maths is one book she has about using maths in the outdoors. So they would be, off the top of my head, people I would dip in and out of.
Have you looked into the whole idea of outdoor education in the States? Because there is kind of a movement there about, you know, certain groups that kind of believe that all education should be in the open air. Have you looked into any of those?
Yeah, well, I've read about it, and I suppose there's the kind of Steiner philosophy on education as well. But I think, like a lot of early education people, if you take Friedrich Friebel, Maria Montessori, John Dewey, they all advocated the outdoors and including the outdoors in teaching and learning. I think the difficulty for us in the primary school context, and this is a difficulty for primary school teachers, is the planning notes, the organisation, and I suppose the lack of experience and education in how to teach outdoors is a kind of stumbling block. But there are a lot of preschools now that are, my niece actually attends a preschool in Trim, and they're pretty much out all of the time. So we get some great pictures from her. I suppose that's coming from there's a big movement in Sweden and Scandinavia on that, the forest schools. And so I suppose there'll be a generation of those children who will now come into primary school and feel maybe as constrained as I did when I went to Donegal Town. But it's a very interesting area, yeah, in integrating the two, I think.
Who or what inspires you?
I'm very grateful for the childhood that I had, for the family that I had growing up. My parents had, I suppose looking back on it, it was just traditional Irish family. But one of the things, you're expected to work hard and you're expected to try your best. And that applied to education as much as anything else. And I mean, we were sent into the library from a young age to walk into the library and to get books and to bring them home. So there was a love of learning there at that stage, and that passed all the way up. And I mean, we had great relationships with our as grandchildren, with our grandparents. We spent weeks in Lochinlinnar Dra and Barnesmore Gap, just again up on mountains. I mean, there were no mobile phones, no Wi-Fi, none of that. And it was just real simple. And it was probably the end of an era where they were saving hay by hand and taking turf home, and just to have that freedom and just to really get that relationship where you got to love your grandparents. It's a unique relationship in itself. From that, they're the people, I suppose, that I would look to as someone growing up now, that those people have gone before me, yeah.
And when you talk about all those, that time spent outdoors in Donegal, a lot of people associate the west of Ireland in general with lots of rain and wet and windy weather. That didn't seem to put you off or to dampen your enthusiasm for the outdoors.
Well, see, I think it's all context, because if you live in other parts of the world, you realise that Ireland really has quite an average climate. But we seem to think it's horrendous. But I actually remember crying going to cross country races when I was a child, and now I run them, and they're my most favourite event. So I think it's a matter of, once you realise that and get used to that, it's not that bad at all. And I actually don't remember it raining in Donegal when I was a child, but I think that's the same for everybody's childhood. But there were probably lots of days it was, yeah.
Now, even with running, I think it's always worse looking out at it than being out in it.
Yeah, I think once you get out there, that it gets a lot easier then from that point on, yeah.
If you could make one change to your current school and resources were not an issue, what change would you make?
Just additional personnel, really. I think primary schools in Ireland do a fantastic job given the resources that we do have. And things are, even access now to special needs assistant, to additional SEN teachers and even class teachers. We're very lucky in that we have parents who volunteer a lot and help out. But I mean, I suppose we're our own worst enemies with the culture of volunteerism we have. But even just to have additional teachers, additional staff in the school, for me, it just makes such a difference.
And how would you deploy the additional staff? And would they be teachers?
Again, we're down to a King Solomon job here. But I mean, okay, well, I'll stick with what I said. So, for example, we have a lot of in-class work now, SEN teachers involved in in-class work, okay? But if we have an issue now where we have a behavioural difficulty with a child, if there's an emotional problem at home, it's very difficult to get time for that child just to maybe be out of class to get some time. So in-class support has worked very really well for us, and we have very good systems in place, but they are very demanding of time and of really rigid timetables. That's very hard on SEN teachers and also on class teachers in terms of that organisation. So additional staff there to have that flexibility to help with one-off situations, or if we got a number of children, let's say, with difficulties with their first language being English, it's very difficult to cater. Something has to give all the time. That's really the difficulty, I suppose. So for that not to be the case would be fantastic.
You've kind of touched on this last one already, but I'm going to ask it again anyway. What, from your own primary or post-primary education, most informs your practice in education today?
They were quite traditional educations, but it was always great fun. We always had great fun at primary school and secondary school. And given the amount of, and I don't mean to talk about too much, but you know, initiative overload, regulations. I mean, even to take your children now from the classroom down the town on a trip, you'd have a book published with all the paper that's involved. And I just think that's really sad. So trying to keep it that children can continue to have fun while they learn. While also, and I think it's important, like in school, again, in school, there were high expectations and you were expected to work hard and you were expected to behave. And I think that's important. They're important lessons for children. So I suppose that forms the way I think about primary education, the combination of those things.
And that was Paul O'Donnell, principal of St. Patrick's National School in Slane, currently on secondment to the Catholic Primary Schools Management Association, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. Paul's book is called Wild Teaching and is available from Meath County Council. Remember, you can listen to or download 350 episodes of Inside Education dating back to 2009 by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. My own book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from online bookstores, from the publisher Routledge, or on request from your local library. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.